Good evening. My name is Greg Rosine, and I want to welcome you to tonight's 2014 election candidate forum, sponsored by Western Michigan University's public radio station, WMUK, and the Friends of WMU, a nonpartisan political action committee. We want to thank the candidates for their participation this evening, and we want to thank you for your interest and participation as well. Tonight's forum features the candidates for the State House of Representatives in the 60th and 61st districts. We've passed out some note cards for you to write down your questions for the candidates. We'll continue to gather them as the forum proceeds. You just need to raise them in the air. Our moderator for tonight's forum is Mr. Gordon Evans, news reporter and producer at WMUK. Gordon will explain the format and rules for tonight's forum. Gordon?
Thank you, Greg. We will begin with the candidates having a one-minute opening statement. Then we'll go to questions. The candidates will have 90 seconds to answer each question. We'll ask the question to all four candidates who are up here tonight. A candidate may be asked a follow-up question. That will be at my discretion. They'll have 30 seconds to answer that follow-up question. When we get to the end, candidates will have 1 minute for closing statements. And again, there is the opportunity for you to submit your questions for us to pose to the candidates. Our candidates tonight going across the stage are Republican Mike Perrin and Democrat John Hoadley. They are running in the 60th State House District. That's the one that includes the city of Kalamazoo. Libertarian Michael Stampfler and Democrat John Fisher are running in the 61st State House District. That's the one that includes the city of Portage. The Republican candidate in the 61st, Brant Iden, could not be here tonight because he has a Kalamazoo County Commission meeting. He has submitted a statement, which Greg Rosine will now read before we get to the opening statements from the candidates who are here.
Thank you, Gordon. This is from Brant Iden. Thank you for the opportunity to be part of this public discussion, and please excuse my absence from tonight's conversation. As many of you are aware, I am a member of the Kalamazoo County Board of Commissioners, and tonight we are meeting to continue our work ensuring that our county remains one of the most fiscally responsible counties in the state. I appreciate all those who came out tonight to learn more about the candidates in this upcoming election and the issues they stand for. As a small business owner and employer, I can assure you that supporting our businesses and attracting new businesses is a top priority for me. This means more jobs, support for Michigan's great entrepreneurial spirit, and a healthy economy. And, of course, a healthy economy requires a capable workforce. WMU is a top-notch university. The whole state of Michigan has wonderful colleges, trade schools, institutes of higher and continued learning. My plan is to support these institutions and help strengthen the connection between our students and the workforce so that our graduates are prepared. I look forward to meeting with you along the campaign trail and encourage you to visit my website at voteiden.com. Thank you again for being here today, Brant Iden.
Let's begin with opening statements from Mike Perrin.
Is there a way to lower this? No. Hello, everybody. I'm Mike Perrin. I'm a candidate for state rep in the 60th District. I'm actually from the Sturgis area originally and ended up coming to Kalamazoo when I wanted to go to Western Michigan University, which I got my bachelor's degree here and my master's degree in clinical psychology. I currently work as a beer salesman, so... You know, usually people smile with that one, but my wife, she went to Western here also. She is a special education teacher. She got her master's degree from here and is currently a teacher in the Kalamazoo area. I have two children, and I'm getting the notice, so thank you.
John Hoadley, 1 minute for opening statement.
Well, hi, my name's John Hoadley, and I'm running because I believe in a Michigan that invests in people. So for me, that shows up in three really big ways. The first is that we need education for today and tomorrow, and I'm not just saying that because we're at Western Michigan University right now. I come from a family of teachers, so I know the value that education can have in transforming people's lives and strengthening our economy. I believe we need to invest more in early childhood education, K-12 education, and higher education to make sure that everybody can be an expert in something that they love. I also think that we need an economy that works for everyone. We need to end corporate tax breaks that aren't producing jobs here at home and instead reinvest in our community. That's how we grow our economy and make us successful. Last but not least, we need to make sure that we are protecting our environment and promoting social justice. These are things that are going to help us attract the best talent in from across the country to be right here in Michigan. With your help, I know that I'll represent Kalamazoo values in the state legislature. Thank you.
Michael Stampfler, opening statement, 1 minute.
Hi, thank you for having me at this event this evening. Let me say I'm the Libertarian candidate. That's an unusual choice for people to have in this district and in the state, as a matter of fact. And I hope that people will be able to consider this as a good, valuable choice, because the issues that normally are discussed with the usual party candidates are not the issues that are the most important to the citizens of this state. As we look forward, we have so many huge issues in front of us that we really need to break out of the typical cycle of Democrats and Republicans and have a different voice and bring those issues to the attention of the public and act on those issues that confront us. Thank you very much.
John Fisher, opening statement, 1 minute.
I thank you for being here. I wish we were over at Rood Hall and I could point to the walls and say that's my plaster, because one of my summer jobs when I was a student here at Western was a plaster tender. That is my plaster. I'm privileged to be in this race. I have a unique opportunity to fulfill my life's work, which is as a local pastor serving people. And now I get to serve the greater good and see to the common good, which is what I've worked at all my life. For me, the common good is public education. It's reordering the tax code so that the middle class can thrive and not just survive. And then it's taking care of our infrastructure. The roads are just the obvious part: water, sewer, and utilities, and the environment. Thank you.
John, stay right there. You'll get the first question. And Michael Stanford, if you could come back over here, you'll be next. So the first question from the audience, and you will have 90 seconds to respond. John Fisher, beginning with you. If you look to 2025, what issues will we have solved for the state of Michigan?
This will sound flippant, and anyway, God knows. There doesn't exist a crystal ball that allows us to say 5 years down the road what issues we will have solved. I can tell you what issues will be important to me, and that is the support of education is number one. And that is from birth through the end of our education, which does not end. I am a graduate from Western. My undergraduate was in aviation engineering technology, and we had to have that word as opposed to aeronautical engineering because we're algebra-based, not calculus-based. So all my drafting was done on a table. Well, I wanted to upgrade it when I was pastor here in Kalamazoo and went down to the community college and took my CAD programs and Pro-E programs. We need to stay on top of and solve our educational needs first.
Michael Stanford, the same question for you. If you look out to 2025, what issues will we have solved for the state of Michigan?
Well, John is correct. You know, there's no crystal ball, but what we really want to think about is hopefully in 2025 we don't have the same mess in Detroit that we have today. And you know, the pattern for cities that fall into bankruptcy is that they repeat. Part of that is the fault of the state of Michigan, because they really don't take the economy of a failed city and restructure it so that there are jobs and opportunities for people. They strictly balance the books and then they leave. So we can expect as voters of this district and of the state that we're going to be asked to help Detroit again, probably before 2025. Our children are very, very important resources. What we would hope is that we'll place better in something like the Annie E. Casey's Foundation report on the status of our children, that Michigan by 2025 will place better than 31st of the 50 states in the condition of our children economically and all the education items that they have that we're behind in. And for something, just to wrap up in the limited time, with something like fracking, which is just under the surface now, literally and figuratively, we have so many rules and laws that we need to consider to protect our environment and to get the information.
Thank you. So let's hear from the candidates now in the 60th State House District, beginning with John Hoadley. If you look out to 2025, what issues will we have solved for the state of Michigan?
So the issue that I'm confident we'll resolve by 2025 is energy independence. I think rule number one is, and I have said this before, is that you never bet against American ingenuity or American innovation. And we are on the cusp of a clean energy revolution that we need not only to create jobs here in Michigan, but to ensure that we can solve some of the global problems we're going to be facing, things like climate change. And what's exciting to me is that Michigan really can be a leader in moving us forward, not only with things like clean battery and high efficiency battery production, but making sure that we are pioneering additional solar and wind production, or finding ways to harness the power of the Great Lakes in a way that produces sustainable, long-term energy. I think by raising expectations on businesses here in Michigan, partnering with our research institutions, that we can really set the conversation for the rest of the country. But there's another issue I hope we can solve, and that's figuring out how we're going to equitably fund education. You know, a lot of states are working on this problem, and the reality is that we have such an amazing model here with the Kalamazoo Promise that we can really be a beacon about what does it mean when we increase access and opportunity for all of our public education students. And I'm hopeful that by 2025, the state realizes the excellent investment that that equal access to higher education can be, or additional trades and schools learning, because when everyone's an expert in something that they love, we all succeed.
Mike Perrin, same question for you. If you look out to 2025, what issues will we have solved for the state of Michigan?
Well, hopefully we solve the education issue. Right now, currently, Michigan is under what they call Common Core, which is a government-regulated sort of aspect of how we teach children in Michigan. And as you may know, it is being frowned upon by many states. Originally, there was four states that did not sign up for Common Core. And now about 20 more are joining to get rid of Common Core. If you don't really understand Common Core, I would like everybody to at least look it up, research it, find out. There's pros and cons to it, but it's kind of a one-size-fits-all basis. And in our diverse community, it's very hard to implement that Common Core to those individuals. It takes away teachers' creativity. As a guy who has children in the education system, education is my number one top priority. Not only is lower education, but college education. Many of us in this room that are students right now can't afford to go to college. I was one of those kids. I have tons of student loans that I had to take out to just get an education. Let's fix that. Let's fix business and job growth in Michigan. Let's get that rolling. With jobs and job growth, violence in areas usually tend to go down and go away. We have a high rate of violence right now that's happening in the city of Kalamazoo. There are people killing one another all the time, more than there's ever been seen. I'd like to see less taxes. I'm a very less tax guy. And I would like to see our roads fixed. We need good infrastructure in order to bring jobs and educators in.
Thank you. You guys can stay there, because we'll start with this race now, the 60th House District candidates. And we'll begin this one with Mike Perrin. How do you believe Michigan should fund roads?
Well, you know, I wish there was an answer that, you know, just popped up, because if everybody had that answer, it'd be done now. But I will say this. After researching a little bit, I've looked at Terry Lynn Land's proposal. What she proposes right now is if we take the federal gas income tax, or the federal gas tax that we pay to the federal government, keep some of that money here, that money we can grow here and use the way that we want, instead of letting the government decide how we use that tax money. I think right now, currently, the federal government percentage of that tax is like 15 cents. So if we keep the money here, we'll have a better option of what we do with that money and how we spend that money, and hopefully we can use that to fix the roads and get the infrastructure rolling again.
John Hoadley, how do you believe Michigan should fund roads?
Well, I'll start by saying I have concerns with Terry Lynn Land's plan. When we keep, by withholding 12.9 cents of every of our gas tax money that we would be sending the federal government to keep locally, we're not actually solving the problem of the revenue gap that exists. Additionally, our federal gas tax is a great bargain for Michigan. We get 103% of the dollars that we send to Washington back. So this is actually a tax that benefits the state of Michigan. When I think about how we're going to ultimately solve the long-term problems of our infrastructure, we need an all-of-the-above strategy. The reality is that we need to close a gap of $1.2 to $1.5 billion in revenue, and that will make sure that we have a diversified set of funding options for both you know, are actually our roads and bridges, but public transportation as well. I think we're going to have to look at some higher additional user fees for our overweight trucks. We're going to have to make sure that we're also potentially looking at different fees for users or gas tax. You know, it's nothing that's great, but the reality is we have to meet this revenue somehow. I will say this, though. I think there's also opportunities to explore cost savings. By investing more in non-motorized transportation, we can reduce long-term maintenance costs. We can also produce additional healthier lifestyle outcomes and, you know, and have a positive impact on the environment. So I'm excited about saying an all-of-the-above solution, and I hope that the legislature, which has a number of good options in front of them right now, doesn't continue to let partisan politics get in the way of passing a set of road bills before the next winter comes. Let's get have them get back to work and get it done.
Let me follow up here, John Hoadley. 30 seconds. When you say invest in non-motorized transportation, specifically, how does the state do that?
So currently, the state has a cap on what they can spend on non-motorized transportation as part of our state and federal funding projects. And right now, it's capped at 2% of any given project. So there's additional opportunities here that we could explore other avenues for investment. So, you know, there might be ways to extend the trail systems. There might be ways to increase walkability in our downtowns, improve sidewalks, and, you know, find partnerships on those opportunities. So I'm asking for flexibility and saying, you know, let's explore ways to reduce use to create long-term savings.
Thank you. Let's hear from the candidates now in the 61st State House District with the same question. We'll begin with Michael Stamfler. How do you believe that Michigan should fund roads?
The current funding mechanism is adequate if we look very hard at the way we spend the money. And so what I'm an advocate of and what I think legislators must learn to do is to be in the position of reviewing contracts and at least knowing how our state issues contracts, how our MDOT issues contracts to have work done. And I think that there's a great amount of economy that we can achieve. Having said that, and that's the number one issue, is more economy in the way that we actually do roads. And so you have the concrete lobby and the asphalt lobby and those kind of things. But in Michigan, you know, it's very difficult to travel through this state now without seeing and being inconvenienced, we could use the word, for road repairs. And it really is a function of the state having had a very severe winter. And I think that the issue itself is a little bit of maybe a red herring, that it's something that's easy for people to discuss, and not the issues that really they have to take hold of and work on more.
John Fisher, how do you believe Michigan should fund roads?
One of the ways that has been discussed with some regularity is raising the gas tax. And I am not in favor of that at the moment. We are already in the area one of the higher gas tax states in the Great Lakes area, and it affects the poor the most, the people who desperately need to get to and from. There are other ways. The use tax and getting at the heavy trucks would be one of the most efficient and important ones. I hear people wanting to put a surcharge on gas-efficient cars, talk about irresponsible and backwards thinking. The lighter cars don't damage our roads. The big trucks do. They should pay their fair share. And if you just increase the tax on their diesel fuel, they'll get their diesel fuel someplace else. So we need to be creative in that. Now, does that mean I've got 30 seconds left? Okay. I officiate high school football. I'm used to my back judge going like this with 10 seconds and then starting countdown. Anyway, the other parts, though, the non-motorized is critical. When you see that it is our poorest people that you watch walking the streets or walking the sidewalks, and in Portage, walking the streets where there aren't sidewalks. And Portage has some wonderful bike lanes that go absolutely nowhere. We
Thank
need
you.
To expand those.
The 61st candidates can stay there. We'll ask you the next question first. The Enbridge oil spill had an immense impact on the Kalamazoo River. How do we prevent future spills, beginning with you, John Fisher?
The simple answer is we don't. As long as we have our system of pipelines in oil, there will be spills. The question is, how do we minimize them, and how do we protect the environment around us? I know that pipeline well because it was originally the Wolverine pipeline, and it went through my family farm. They used to have a pumping station on the corner of my family farm. And my bases are, anyway. We need to be very diligent, and this is one of the areas where Mr. Stampler and I would wrestle. How much regulation do you need? How do you stay on top of these corporations to force them? All they needed to do was to have a simple set of flow meters saying, look, oil is flowing here but not there, and shut it down. They didn't have those. That simple technology that wasn't excessive and should have been enforced. We have a grave danger coming up with the pipeline that's running under the Great Lakes, under the Straits of Mackinac now, and we've got to get our regulatory eggs in order, or we'll have a major problem.
I want to follow up and give you 30 seconds to respond. You say there's nothing we can do about pipelines rupturing. Can't we have standards for structural integrity and those sort of things that may not stop every pipeline rupture but can stop at least some of them?
That is absolutely, that's what I said, we can minimize the impact, and that's the necessary piece. They will at times be flaws, but with simple technology, not really advanced technology, we can minimize that leak. And it could have been this last time. They just weren't paying attention.
Michael Stampler, the Enbridge oil spill had an immense impact on the Kalamazoo River. How do we prevent future spills?
Yes, the Enbridge is one of the reasons that I think fracking is so important and how the rules are garnered for that and put into effect. But I would never argue that we should have no government. I think we just need responsible government. And it's very clear to me that with whether it's oil pipelines or pipelines transporting fracked oil and so on, or gas and so on, those really need to be regulated. But we can't say that we're going to eliminate, because even today with sewer and water, we have all kinds of ruptures of those lines every year in every community. Or, for example, we have a major rain event in Detroit that overflows sewers, et cetera, et cetera. So the key is being ready for those emergencies. And, as I said, with the regulations that are coming online for something new like fracking, to be particularly vigilant that those are done right. You know, the state has, in that regard, asked the University of Michigan, the Graham Institute for Sustainability, to put out and work on the list of regulations that would protect us when we're doing fracking. And it's just it was supposed to be done in August, and it won't be done until the end of the year now. And that's too bad, because the citizens of the state deserve to know, in that very important case, how they're going to protect us.
Thank you. Let's hear from the candidates now and running in the 60th State House District on the same issue. The Enbridge oil spill had an immense impact on the Kalamazoo River. How do we prevent future spills? Beginning with John Hoadley.
This is a great example of why not all regulations are bad. You know, the problem with the Enbridge oil spill, which was the largest inland oil spill in American history, if I'm correct, was a great example of where we did not have enough oversight of the operations that were happening. We had the number of folks that were in charge to inspect those lines was sorely inadequate to solve the problem at hand. And then the reality is that if we would have had more and stronger oversight of this, we could have prevented an incredible disaster that is continuing to impact the Kalamazoo ecosystem. You know, whether we're talking about the Enbridge oil spill, whether we're talking about low-level toxic waste coming into a landfill in Bellevue, whether we're talking about some of these questions about fracking regulations, the reality is that Michigan's ecosystem, our environment, we are the Great Lakes state. This is what's important to our state for both an economic and a moral perspective. We have to do more to say that we're going to protect this gift that's been given to us by generations before, and then that we're going to hold folks accountable to live by the rules that we set. For me, I think that that's, you know, we can't prevent every natural disaster from happening, even under the best circumstances. But we can do more to say we expect more, and we're going to hold you to it.
Mike Perrin, the Enbridge oil spill had an immense impact on the Kalamazoo River. How do we prevent future spills?
I'm pretty much in agreement, in agreeance with a lot of the candidates. Obviously, you can't foresee and prevent every disaster from happening. But I would agree that with technology and increases, that we can build a better one that will make it so that that type of accident doesn't happen again. Now, with that being said, you know, people weren't held accountable as much as they should have been. There should have been more oversight on that pipeline. There should have been more people watching it, and there should have been higher regulations. I'm not anti-government. You know, granted, I don't want the government out of my business as much as possible and less taxes, but I will say this. We obviously need government. We need people to oversee it. We need that oversight, and we need to try to prevent it from happening. Technology, hopefully, in the future, hopefully Michigan will be the leader in technology and develop things that will help us prevent and foresee things like that happening.
Well, since we're dealing with an environmental issue and Mr. Stampfler has raised the issue of fracking twice, why don't we go ahead and deal with that? Should we have fracking in the state of Michigan? And if we're going to have it, what sort of regulations, guidelines, rules should be on it to protect against possible contamination or other problems, beginning with Mike Perrin?
I think I answered this on the radio interview with you. So, you know, to be honest, I was flip-flopping between the whole fracking issue. I think it does a lot of damage to the environment. And kind of going back and forth, I'm against fracking right now. So if fracking does occur and it gets overruled and becomes something of the norm, we really need to watch it closely. We really need to make sure it's regulated closely. We need to make sure it doesn't damage our environment. We need to make sure that it's safe. We need to make sure that it protects our land here in Michigan. Fracking, you know, they say it's been around for years and this and that, you know, pumping the natural gas out and stuff, but I just don't know. It scares me. I mean, you can't tell what you're doing today what might come up 70 years later, you know.
John Hoadley, should we have fracking in Michigan? And if so, what are the guidelines and regulations that should be on it?
So I have grave concerns about hydraulic fracking, both from a transparency standpoint that says we don't know the process or the chemicals that are being pumped into our groundwater, some of which we may never be able to remove, and the question about the long-term environmental impacts. I'm encouraged to hear Mr. Perrin say that he would be against hydraulic fracking, since that would put him at odds with the Republican-led legislature that has made it easier to do prospecting on farmers' land, to trespass on their land for the purpose of prospecting for hydraulic fracking. Also, that made it so we removed a significant portion of local control oversight about how we regulate fracking and where. And more importantly, a Republican-led legislature that's made it easier for the natural gas companies to expand fracking options here in Michigan. So, you know, this is a great example, though, where, you know, I feel like we can't have our cake and eat it, too. You know, this is when it comes to fracking, you know, the long-term decisions that it'll have on our environment are severe. And I'm still waiting to see, you know, I'm happy to look at more information, but the data that's coming out of other states that have expanded hydraulic fracking and the experience that we're even seeing here in Michigan is leading to me to believe that it's not worth the risk, especially when the alternative makes so much more sense. Let's double down on clean energy, things like solar, wind, hydraulic energy that is renewable and long-term, and it's going to create jobs that keep jobs right here in Michigan.
All right, let's hear from the candidates in the 61st State House District on the question of fracking, beginning with Michael Stampfler. Should we have fracking in Michigan? And if we're going to have it, what sort of regulations should be on it?
I think we have to respect the issue that the country needs energy resources. And it's a very important thing that spills over into our foreign policy, the debacle that we're in now or getting into again in Iraq and Afghanistan and Syria and so on. So we absolutely need fracking. But my point is that we must use institutions like University of Michigan's Graham Institute to help bring together the rules that are going to keep our environment and quality of life in Michigan on par with the best. And it troubles me that so many state officials have been allowed to sit with the Graham Institute, appointed by the governor, and it just should be much more independent in the rules that it's going to offer to be considered for the state. So that's something that should be watched very closely by the public. And I was very hopeful, as I said, that they would abide by their earlier set schedule and release this report in August. But I think they might be waiting for the election to be over. And that's very disturbing to me, because once the election's over and the public's focus is elsewhere anyway, it's going to be harder for people to draw a bead on what we need to do to make sure that our wonderful environment in Michigan is blessed.
Let me stay there, because I'm going to follow up and give you 30 seconds. How much uncertainty do we tolerate in terms of what we know about fracking, possible contamination, those sort of things, if we're going to go ahead and allow it?
Well, you know, if we go to Pennsylvania and look at the things that have happened there, if we go to North Dakota and look at the issues there, we surely can be educated on what kinds of things we absolutely want to avoid. But in the main, we can sum it up with fracking here, is we absolutely, as a citizenry, have the right, or should have the right, to know the chemicals that are being placed into the ground before they're put into the ground. And we don't want to learn about that stuff afterward. And so that's just one simple thing, that we need to have it, but we need to take care of ourselves.
John Fisher? Should we have fracking in Michigan, and if we're going to have it, what rules and regulations should be on it?
Mr. Stamfler and I have a strong agreement here, and one of the problems we have is a lot of this is still federal-based. The federal governments prohibit the knowing of some of the chemicals, and until the federal government changes those regulations, we should not allow it until we force them to change. How can we allow people to put stuff in our ground that we don't know what it is? We absolutely have to stand up. The thing that brought people to Michigan in the first place and will bring our industry and stuff back is the fact that we have water. And you look around the world, that'll be critical. But we only have water as we take care of it. And so the benefits that are available in the fracking right now pale to the potential of the damage that it could cause. So I think we need very critical, very, very stern regulations until we get the fullness of the truth of what they're doing and what it does to our environment. And part of this is not rocket science. I was involved when we were talking about the energy or the pipeline. That was not new technology that was needed. It was just oversight. We could have had that prevented back when I was in school. It's just that they chose to maximize profits and didn't worry about the risks.
Next question. We'll begin with the candidates for the 61st House District. This summer saw a lot of violence in Kalamazoo, including the deaths of children. How do we keep our community safe, beginning with John Fisher?
We pay a huge price in our country for the idea that my safety depends on my ability alone, that I have to be ready to defend myself at all costs. And then we tell particularly young boys that that's what it means to be a man. It begins, I fault the churches to a degree at this, of not helping people to understand that we're all in this together. And one of the big reasons for the uptick in violence is just the lack of jobs. These kids have got nothing else to do, and they're trying to prove their adulthood. We need to help redefine what that adulthood means and to move away from the culture that says my safety depends on how much violence I can project out onto others. So it would be employment and programs for our youth and our young people and our community that afford us greater safety, and it would be the churches doing their part to talk about what real adulthood is.
Michael Stamford, the same question for you. This summer saw a lot of violence in Kalamazoo, including the deaths of children.
How do we keep our communities safe?
We have this situation all through the nation. You know, the country was riveted its attention in Ferguson just a while ago. The long and the short of it is, unless we get to the point where we're going to make our economy work and not cede the idea that it's okay for Michigan to have 7% or 9% unemployment and other areas of the country to have high rates of unemployment, and not cede the idea that there really should be an upper stratosphere income level and then a huge void where the rest of the people are at the bottom of that, unless we work to do better in those areas, I think we're just going to keep repeating this issue of the violence and the terrible consequences of what this economic division means. You know, some of the great things that have been done, for example, the Kalamazoo Promise that's been referenced, is a wonderful thing to start, but you can't have a state like Michigan with its kids at the 31st level of well-being out of the 50 states and say that we're really preparing those kids, even though they're going to have free tuition, we're really doing all that we should for those kids. And some manifestation of this inadequacy is the violence that we see.
Same question for the candidates in the 60th State House District. This summer saw a lot of violence in Kalamazoo, including the deaths of children. How do we keep our communities safe, beginning with Mike Perrin?
Well, I'd like to tell you more police would be the answer, but it's not. Job growth, keeping our children active in education, that's a start right there. Let's keep them in school. Let's try to get this dropout rate. Even though we have the Kalamazoo Promise, it seems like there's a lot of kids dropping out of that Kalamazoo Promise. And if there was one thing, like I've mentioned before, what I'd like to see is make the promise eligible to every child. It's not eligible if you go to a Christian school. It's not eligible if you go to a charter school. It's really the Kalamazoo Public Promise. And I understand it's done by donors that have the right and choice to do that, but I would like to see it available for every child in Michigan. But going back to what we were talking about with that, we need more programs. We as a community need to pull together and get these kids and get them off the street, try to get them away from the violence, and try to make them better citizens of Kalamazoo. Thank you.
I'm going to follow up here and give you 30 seconds. What would you do as a state lawmaker to perhaps provide more programs? And since you brought up college tuition, what would you do to try to make college more affordable for, especially for students who don't fall into the Kalamazoo Promise?
Well, I'd like to see Michigan get more involved, and hopefully there's more federal grants out there, or maybe we can talk to these donors and get them to include some of these other people. You know, the bad thing is they're anonymous, but somebody out there knows who they are. Maybe we can talk to them. Maybe we can maybe even make a better incentive. If you're somebody, for instance, myself, I decided to stay here. After I graduated Western, I didn't want to leave Kalamazoo. I chose to buy my house. I've been here over 14 years living in the Winchell neighborhood. It's important. I want to be a valuable resource for the city of Kalamazoo.
Thank you. John Hoadley, this summer saw a lot of violence in Kalamazoo, including the deaths of children. How do you keep our community safe?
The violence this summer was heartbreaking. I serve on the board of Mothers of Hope, and we were on the front lines trying to get to the bottom of what's causing this uptick of violence. And so I sat down with members of the Washington Street Boys. I sat down with members in the neighborhoods that were affected by this. And I'll tell you, the answer that stood out to me above all others was, why are we doing this? And it was because there's nothing else to do. And I said, so stop for a second. If you had a job, you know, what do you have to make? What's good money so you that you're not out in the street causing trouble? You know what the number was? It's 10 bucks an hour. A good job that keeps you off the street is $10 an hour. That's the difference between violence and death or opportunity. And when we were thinking back in 2009, when we had a federal grant and we hired 1,000 young people for the summer. It was statistically one of the safest and quietest summers that Kalamazoo has ever had. The theme is clear. When folks have opportunity in the ability to do an honest day's work for an honest day's pay, they take advantage of that. But when they think that they cannot access that opportunity, they think that that part of the American dream isn't available to them, then they look for other avenues. I think we can do better. I think as the lawmakers, we can do more to encourage youth employment, which is twice the state unemployment average. And we can do more to encourage our communities to really take care of those young folks by giving them a chance.
Next question. We'll start with the candidates for 60th State House District. Should Michigan legalize recreational use of marijuana? John Hoadley.
Yes. I mean, you know, I've been on record on this for a long time. Yes, we should institute. We should legalizing the recreational use of marijuana. It should be in a well-regulated system that provides appropriate safeguards for our community and those that use it to make sure that we're not having it being sold near schools or churches, that we're making sure that folks are operating in a safe manner, much like we do with alcohol, and recognizing that because of the societal costs that may incur, that we should be taxing it at a level so we can recoup the vast majority of those costs. The end of the day, there is additional costs placed on our system for a lot of folks that are using it recreationally. And so we're breaking up families, denying people the opportunity for a good job because they decided to smoke a joint. I mean, come on. This is not the Michigan that I believe in. This is not the Michigan that we all believe in. Let's give folks a second chance. And let's make sure that we're putting our priorities for our prisons and our police on things that actually are going to be solving problems in our communities, not recreational drug use. So yeah, let's take advantage of this. Let's legalize marijuana. Let's make sure it's safely regulated, and let's learn from Colorado and Washington, places that are currently engaged in this public policy experience, this experiment, to make sure that we're reaping the rewards and reducing the harms.
Mike Perrin, should Michigan legalize recreational use of marijuana?
Yes, but just marijuana. I mean, I don't believe obviously some other recreational drugs out there should be legalized, for instance, coke, crystal meth, things of that nature. But marijuana, the hype isn't there. I sell beer for a living. It's no worse than alcohol, okay? And it takes up a lot of our resources. We've got people in jail. We've got, costs that occur with that. It's not a drug that kills you. Do you understand what I'm saying with that? So, yes, I would be for legalizing marijuana, and I would be, okay with the money that it would create. I think it would create lots of jobs. I think it would create tons of job growth. With that being said, yeah, let's do it.
Let's hear from the candidates in the 61st State House District. The same question for them. We'll begin this time with John Fisher. Should Michigan legalize recreational use of marijuana?
I think it's a moot issue. It's done, and it's just waiting for the laws to be put in place. But I enjoy the fact that my grandfather was a state representative from 1917 to 1922, and we went back and researched, and one of the laws that he co-signed was the prevention of operating of motorized vehicles, which were new then, under the influence of alcohol and stupefying drugs. And so I suspect one of the laws that I will have to sponsor will be what level of marijuana and how do you measure it will make it illegal for you to operate. We can't call it a stupefying drug anymore, but we'll have to be able, and there are now some pretty easy, some machines that test it pretty, and well, that'll be part of us being responsible. We'll be passing laws that say at this level of cannabis in your system, you can operate, and at that level, you've gone too far.
But just to be clear, you are on record supporting legalizing recreational use?
I'm on record saying it's going to happen.
Are you okay with it happening?
Yeah. Okay. I'm one of the few in my family that never has, so I don't have a strong feeling one way or the other.
Well, Michael Stamfor, you have the opportunity to reach unanimity here. Should Michigan legalize recreational use of marijuana?
Yes, I'm in favor of it. And I think that the overarching concern is that we need to emphasize personal responsibility, but within bounds. And I'm sure that legislation can be crafted similar to alcohol that will give that the opportunity to happen. The overarching concern for me, though, in the question is one that was touched on briefly, is that this country spends so much in incarcerating people. And the government of the United States and the government of the state of Michigan must cut those kind of things out. They're wasteful, and they're so ruinous to people's lives. And so we have so many people, and it's a certain segment of society that are incarcerated. And that needs to change in our country, and our government needs to get to the things that need to be addressed for us.
All right. We'll start again with the candidates in the 61st State House District for the next question, beginning with Michael Stampfler. Should Michigan amend the Elliott Larson Civil Rights Act to allow equal protection for gay and transgender individuals?
Yes. I think it's fair, it's time, and it should be done.
Anything else?
No.
Okay. John Fisher, should Michigan...
I have a longer answer.
Should Michigan amend the Elliott Larson Civil Rights Act?
Yes.
You get the same 90 seconds. Should the Elliott Larson Civil Rights Act be amended?
Yes. When I was in high school, my high school choir director was extremely important to me. When I came back and started singing in the Bach Festival Choir, I became aware that he was in very bad health and was living at home only because his partner was caring for him. I didn't know he was gay when I was in high school. I didn't need to. I wasn't gay. But if I was, I would have liked to have known there was a gay man who had succeeded and hadn't lived as an outcast. I then found out that his partner was the same partner he had back when I was in high school, which was way back in the previous century. His partner, David, fulfilled all the requirements of a spouse. He deserved the rights, and he did not have them. And that's wrong. We need to... One of the reasons I didn't know Mr. Thusius was gay was he couldn't be open about it. He'd lose his job. That's wrong. He was a wonderful teacher, a great choir director, and like I said, very important in my life. We need to continue. Does that mean I've got... Oh, good, I got plenty of time. When I went to Mr. Thusius' funeral... The Missouri Synod pastor stood up there and gave all the reasons why Mr. Thusius was going to heaven. He lived a wonderful life. He'd done all the right things, but he never once mentioned Dave, who had been important in seeing to it that he had lived that life, and David had blessed that life, and he could not talk about it, and that was wrong.
All right, let's hear from the candidates in the 60th State House District now on the same question. Beginning with John Hoadley, should Michigan amend the Elliott Larson Civil Rights Act to allow equal protection for gay and transgender individuals?
So I'm in favor of amending the Elliott Larson Civil Rights Act to include protections based on your sexual orientation and your gender identity. That would make sure that regardless if you're gay or straight, transgender or not, the reality is that you're being judged on the quality of your work above everything else, not who you are or who you love. Additionally, because we're amending the Elliott Larson Civil Rights Act, it would also include access to public accommodations and housing. So the reality then is that you wouldn't be able to be kicked out of your home or denied opportunity at a public institution just because of who you are or who you love, which is why it's important that we amend the full Elliott Larson Civil Rights Act. Now, there's a conversation happening right now that's frustrating to me, not only as a gay person, right, but as someone that cares about Michigan's future. There's a partisan political shenanigans that are happening that says they're holding up progress because they're worried about the election, because they're worried about keeping some leverage in lame duck. And I think that's wrong. You know, enough is enough. We've been trying to amend the Elliott Larson Civil Rights Act to be fully inclusive since 1984. 30 years is long enough. You know, this is something that corporations and unions figured out a long time ago, that majorities in all political parties support, that the vast majority of Michigan residents already get. Let's treat people, everyone, fairly and equally. You should be judged on how you show up, not who you are. And if we amended it to include sexual orientation and gender identity, we'd get there.
Mike Perrin, should Michigan amend the Elliott Larson Civil Rights Act to allow equal protection for gay and transgender individuals?
We talked about this before on your radio show, and I said yes. Obviously, no group should be discriminated against. I think that's horrible. And I don't know why we actually put people in groups. We are all people of this country. We are all people of this state. Nobody should be discriminated against for any reason. You shouldn't lose your job because of anything, because of your color, race, identity, sexual orientation. I was actually kind of shocked, believe it or not, because I just didn't know it. I didn't even know it wasn't included up until recently. I mean, that's sad to say on my part, but it's opened a new light. Yes, should we have that amended? Of course.
Well, two straight questions. We have unanimity. We'll have to find something here to argue about. Or
he wants an argument.
Let's move on to the next question, and you gentlemen can stay up here. We'll start with the candidates for 60th State House District, beginning with Mike Perrin. Michigan's cities are stressed. How do we help our cities in this state?
Man, there's lots of cities that need help too, aren't there? You know, we as legislators, when I become the next state representative, then I'll work with other legislators and look at a lot of the cities with all the issues that is going on out there and help to work and find ways to make them better. That's all we can do. There's so many differences, and it would take hours to talk about it all, but we do. We need to get together, bipartisan, together, Democrats, Republicans, on both sides of the aisles, get together, fix the cities, make Michigan as a whole. It's not just the 60th district. It's the whole state that we represent. So it's very important to make that work.
John Holley, what do we do about Michigan's stressed cities?
Gordon, I'll start by saying that's a big question. You know, and we're going to need a whole lot of tools in our toolbox to make sure that we can improve and strengthen our cities and communities. The first thing, though, I think that's important to recognize is that we need stable, predictable municipal revenue sharing. One of the problems is that it is hard for cities to figure out what their budgets are going to be and deal with long-term drivers in their deficits because the rules keep getting changed in the legislative level that then changes the amount of money that actually makes it back to our cities. So it's hard to have long-term planning when you can't make a plan, right? Because you don't know what rules they're going to change. So let's create some predictability there and signal that we're going to leave that alone for a while so cities can plan. The second thing, though, is that we as a state can do more to encourage investment back in our cities from a broader perspective. The first is that we can create and pass policies that make Michigan more welcoming and attractive. You know, we were one of the states that lost population in the last census. Good news is that we're bringing folks back. But the more people that choose to start their families and their businesses in Michigan is really just long-term benefit for our communities. So let's do more to say everyone's welcome here. We want you investing in growing your family, your business, growing old here in Michigan. And the last thing I think we can do that is by retaining our senior citizens, by making sure that we stop harmful policies like the senior pension tax and the homestead property tax exemption repeal that ended up then damaging our seniors.
Let's hear from the candidates now in the 61st State House District on the same question, beginning with Michael Stampfler. Michigan's cities are stressed. How do we help them?
So this is part of the issue that is best identified through, for example, Detroit. And, of course, the state now has the largest municipal bankruptcy in the nation. And as I said, and I really believe this, having been the emergency manager appointed by Governor Granholm for the city of Pontiac, the state's toolbox, as has been referenced by John, doesn't include much other than a balancing of the books. That's a great start. It's an important start. It has to be done. But then the state leaves and turns the city back with no restructured economy. Just the books are balanced. And so the same thing happens. And if we look at our communities, it's been a long time that Benton Harbor has suffered. It's been a long time that Flint has suffered. It's been a long time that Saginaw has suffered. It's been a long time that Hamtramck has suffered. And on and on and on. And my prediction is, and I very much dislike this, but Detroit will suffer a long time because the state does not have the willpower or the desire or the expertise to make sure that they're in the game to restructure the economy of us, of the cities, and not just redo the books. So we have a long haul on this, and legislators are going to really need to take the bull by the horns. The biggest thing to do is the R&Ds haven't done the economy, economic growth.
Your time's up, and I'm going to follow up. How long does it take the state? Because these cities want to get back to local control at some point. How long does the state need to stay in the process to go beyond just balancing the books and changing, as you say, the structure? 30 seconds.
Well, the state is usually in communities for 5 years. That's a little lengthy. In Detroit, this emergency manager will leave after 1 year. But that's geared for the November election. After that, the public will get the word that it hasn't quite worked out so well in Detroit and that we need to send more money and we need to take other steps, just like Detroit Public Schools has happened. So it's a question of individual time for individual, the gravity of the situation in each community.
Thank you. John Fisher, what do we do about Michigan's stressed cities?
I think Mr. Hoadley had a big part of it right on the head. We need stability to promise what kind of money is coming. It's easy to look and say, well, this city's run out of money and that city's run out of money after you've taken money out of their budgets. When you cut Detroit $900,000 or you cut the city of Kalamazoo and profit, you know, revenue sharing, and then say, why can't you live with your budget? They're saying, well, what budget? Which one do you want us to go by? The one we had last year? How are we to know? So it becomes absolutely critical that we begin to have clear guidelines and say, this is what we're going to fund out more than a year down the road. Now, it would be nice if we could do that 4 or 5 years down the road, which doesn't seem to be asking much, but it's far more than we've been doing. It's exactly the same problem you have with the public schools. The public schools are stressed, and they keep getting their budgets cut, and then they say, well, live within your budget. And they try to say, which one? The one that we had last year, the one that's coming? We need a higher predictability from the state as to what revenue sharing will be, and then we need to give it back to where it was.
All right, next question. We'll begin with the candidates for 61st State House District, beginning with John Fisher. Would you support a change to Michigan's right-to-work law, and tell us why or why not?
That is absolutely the worst name possible for that legislation that was passed. That legislation should be known from henceforth as the corporate servitude law. Because when you take away the rights of workers to negotiate and to have a voice, they become servants of the corporations, and we begin to have government by the corporations, not by elected people. One of the illustrations that I've used in my churches for now 10 years is Apple Corporation. And now I'm not biased. I'm a Macintosh evangelical, but in 2004, the first articles came out, the mountain of cash that Apple Corporation is sitting on. This year, 2014, the mountain of cash, $198 billion. Thousands of articles on the, quote, liberal press over 10 years talking about what Apple could do with that money. Not one of them ever mentioned they could pay their workers more. That's what happens when you take away the union's ability to collect funds. They're not even part of the conversation. We need to repeal it.
Michael Stampler, would you support a change to Michigan's right-to-work law? Why or why not?
I think right-to-work is fine in concept. To me, the issue is much broader. The marketplace is one thing that we have, like the bank or like cash or whatever, to measure how our performance is. So what people pay for minimum wage and so on, while always open for debate, is one of those issues that we can at least measure and understand how that goes. And whether you're in a union or not, I think the marketplace, it has to be one that is the regulator or the oversight. Having said that, what our problem really is, I think, is that when NAFTA and CAFTA were postulated by politicians and passed, no one explained to the public, the workers, what that was going to mean in terms of the driving down of wage levels and the economic doldrums that the country has. So the problem, I think, is more impressive or more involved than strictly whether I can join a union or whether I can't, or whether I must or must not. It has to do with the actions of Republicans and Democrats in the past, even, to sign these agreements that created a huge sucking sound in our country and that people are still scrambling to figure out how can we get back on the right track.
Let's hear from the candidates now in the 60th State House District. We'll begin this time with Mike Perrin. Would you support a change to Michigan's right-to-work law?
No, can I shout it? I love Right to Work. Right to Work was one of the best things to happen to Michigan. Now, here's the weird concept, and I don't know where the confusion is with some folks, but it didn't eliminate unions. Unions still exist. You can still be a part of the union. So I don't know how that affects anything with Right to Work. What it does is it gives us freedom. It gives us choices. You know, you don't have to pay somebody to watch for your job. You know what? If you're doing a good enough job, you're not going to lose your job. You're going to still have your job. There are a lot of people out there, you know, especially with my wife being a teacher, she's not part of the union anymore. There's been now a movement because they held people into contracts with the union and gave them this little tiny window in August, which just got overruled, is now gone. Over 8,000 people, 8,000 teachers are leaving the unions. If they want to be a part of the union, great, they still can. Michigan didn't eliminate that option. Right to Work didn't eliminate that option. You still have a choice. And as a person, an employee in the state of Michigan, I don't want to be a part of the union. I want it to be my choice if I do, but I don't. So therefore, it didn't really eliminate unions. It gave you all a choice. Everybody, the whole state.
John Hoadley, would you support a change to Michigan's Right to Work law?
Before I answer that, you know, I am really intrigued by from the last question. And so, Gordon, I'd love if you could follow up with Mr. Stampfler at some portion and ask, what does restructuring the local economy look like, and how would you do that in your job? Because it sounds like you're asking for more government investment, but I'm just very curious. But the second piece on that, do I support the Right to Work law? The answer is no, and I would actively work to repeal it. The problem is that this is the Right to Work for Less has been in other states shown to significantly reduce per capita income. They create the race to the bottom in terms of our opportunities for our salaries and our protections. And additionally, it creates an incentive for folks to both opt out of paying the union and then freeload on the services that union provides. I mean, this is really a recipe for disaster, and it's indicative of this idea that, you know, I want services, but I don't want to pay for them. And I think that's bad. It moves us in the wrong direction for paying for our community goods. And it moves us really in a direction that says, I'm only looking out for myself instead of everybody else. When states have strong union movements, we see less wage inequality internally in companies. We see less wage inequality based on gender. We see more opportunity for consistent support and advancement, as well as predictable solutions to grievances. You know, this is part of a larger campaign that is meant to destroy the unions. And so, you know, I really hope that we take a step back and say, you know, are we making sure that our voices are represented in the workplace?
Let's stay with the candidates for 60th State House District. We'll begin with John Hoadley. How does Michigan become a cutting-edge state?
Cool. Cutting edge. I like it. Okay. How do we become a cutting-edge state? Well, I do think there's some states that we can look to as maybe opportunities for what we should be doing, and states that maybe have shown us what doesn't work. I am loving the public policy experiment occurring between Minnesota and Kansas right now, right? And so remember the book, What's the Matter with Kansas? They figured it out. When they have a state whose their economic model is based on cuts, when they've lowered the taxes to the point that they can't fund their schools, it turns out people don't want to be there, companies don't want to be there, and they're left with giant holes in their budget. When you look to states like Minnesota that have a higher tax, higher investment model, what they're actually showing is that they have higher per capita income, faster economic growth, and higher outcomes on a whole number of scales. So how do we become cutting edge? I think it starts with reinvesting in our communities, making education a priority for our state, making sure that we're promoting local and small business as real drivers of our economy, and protecting our environment. You know, I said I believe that Michigan invests in people. It's not just because I think that's a good thing to say. I think that's how we become the cutting-edge state that we want to be. When we say everybody should be an expert in something they love and we make our budget match that priority, when we say that we want to end tax cuts to corporations that aren't making jobs and instead invest in small business, and when we protect our environment and welcome everybody, that makes the place that people want to go to, this is where they will come, and that's how we stay and become cutting edge.
Mike Perrin, how does Michigan become a cutting edge state?
Well, I'd say we're on the right track right now with what a lot of the things that Governor Snyder and our legislature has done. Keep it Right to Work. Keep taxes low. Let's get rid of the federal government in Michigan. Let's try to keep them out of us. Let's keep Michigan, keep our money, keep our dollars here. Reinvest in ourselves. I think that is what would make Michigan a cutting-edge state. Obviously, we need to have more technology, more businesses come in and grow and rise Michigan up. Bring more people in, more people that care, more educated people.
Thank you. Let's hear from the candidates now in the 61st State House District, beginning with Michael Stampfler. How does Michigan become a cutting-edge state?
So the only answer for that is really the economy has to be grown. And this is what the Democrats and Republicans have failed to do for Michigan. And that's the condition that we're in. And we have the 21st gross domestic product of all the states. We're in the middle. We have the largest municipal bankruptcy in our state. Our children are 31st. On a schedule of how we compare with other states in terms of overall well-being. So we have these huge problems. To be cutting edge, we really need a legislature that is not afraid to ask tough questions and to make the changes that are needed to get the economy in Michigan going. And that's a long, tough sled, but that's what's going to have to happen.
Let me follow up. As a libertarian, what is the government's role in doing that, given that libertarians generally believe that government's role should be very limited?
Government's role should be limited to the things that people can't do for themselves and the most important things. For example, government should not incarcerate a huge percentage of a certain racial classes in prisons for marijuana use. I think we can make steps, changes like that, that mean that we have money enough to spend if we spend it more wisely. We don't need more taxes. We just need to spend the money that we have more wisely. And the imprisonment of people is one of those instances that we see we should change.
John Fisher, how does Michigan become a cutting-edge state?
I think Mr. Hoadley pointed out well, the one thing not to do is to be Kansas and insist that cutting taxes is what's going to do it. One of the obvious ones is right here. Invest in higher education. Things like the Sun Racer, the solar-driven race cars. It's great that Western and U of M both are pretty competitive in that. And it is in those types of things that we hold an edge. The new lithium-ion battery plant that's coming up. We have innovative people. They need to be supported. And our institutions of higher learning need to be given the resources so that they can support that, both the R&D, the experimentation, and to help people to dream dreams. I have a bias towards airplanes. And they had a little Ostomo days out here, and Western had two wonderful exhibits. It's great to help people to see how they fly. Now, I chose to go to Western over U of M in the aviation department because at Western I got my hands dirty. And at U of M I wouldn't have touched a tool ever. And I was the guy that wanted to get my hands dirty. But we need to invest in both. So higher education holds one of the keys. We got great institutions. We need to support them.
All right. We have come to the time for closing statements. Gentlemen, stay there. John Fisher, let's hear from you for 1 minute for closing statement.
Wow, I got to open, too, didn't I? This is nice. All of my adult life has been aimed at serving people and raising up the common good. I have been blessed to work with common folks. That's the family I come from. That's who make up my congregations in the community. Now I have this unique opportunity to carry that on into the legislature. My experience as a pastor, which is a CEO, it's a wonderful thing, has taught me how to bring diverse groups together to work for the common good. And that's what we need in Lansing. People to sit down and come together for the common good, rather than carving out their own niches and beating each other up. That's what I'll do when you elect me.
Michael Stampfler, closing statement, 1 minute, please.
So I think what I'd like to do is to be able to say to everyone that everything's been great with the Republicans and Democrats, but it's not the case. I don't feel that way. I think we need a new perspective. I am the one here, I think, that has the most government experience, probably. I actually ran a city, a couple cities. So I'm familiar with what it takes to run a city and what kinds of things our cities in our state are having problems with. I've also worked for a county government, and I've also worked for the state government. So I'm familiar with what government can do and what government really struggles and can't do. And so I think that's a unique perspective that most legislators don't have. It's good to say we ought to do something. It's a little different to say, how can we get it done? And I think Michigan needs a real strong dose of how we can get it done.
Could we liven things up and we could talk for our opponent who's not here?
No, I don't think so. But thank you, the candidates in the 61st. Let's hear from the candidates down the 60th State House District. Closing statements, 1 minute, beginning with John Hoadley.
Well, Gordon and Craig and everybody here that is, Greg, and everyone here that has been, participating tonight, thank you so much. Really appreciate it, your thoughtful questions. I started by saying I believe in a Michigan that invests in people. And I want to close by making sure that we understand there is a contrast. Choices have been made over the last 4 years in an entirely Republican-controlled legislature that have put people behind profits, where they've decided that we're going to be doing, where we have cut higher education, we've cut K-12 education. It's been endorsed from Governor Snyder on down. That's not the Michigan that I believe in, and it's not the Michigan that I think really moves us forward together. I'm asking people to really take a look at at your ballot this fall and thinking about not only the race in front of them, but the conversation that we want to move in. I got into this race because the decisions we're going to make over the next few years could impact generations to come, and I hope that you'll join me in prioritizing a Michigan that invests in people.
And Mike Perrin, closing statement, 1 minute.
Hello. Thank you again, everybody, for coming. Thank you for the wonderful questions. It was a pleasure, as always. One thing I need to say, though, is, Governor Snyder, he gets the rap on some of this education cuts, and it's not all true. He's invested $36 million in education. But, folks, when you vote for somebody, you need to think and you need to look at that candidate very, very well. Like my opponent, John, here, a lot of campaign contributions come in and stuff like that. People raise money. I mean, it costs a lot to do this. I'm going to give you a good example. I'm under the $1,000 barrier for raising money. And I kind of looked at John's campaign finance statement, and he's got a lot of interest from outside of Michigan. I think out of the 650 donations that he's gotten, over 500 of them were from Washington, D.C. area or California or Texas. I don't believe John's lived here a long time either. I've lived here a long time. I've invested in this community. I work here.
Thank you.
Thanks.
And that's closing statement. Thank you. Thank you, candidates, for being here. Thank you for coming out. Remember, the election is November 4th.